My name's Sean Collier, upstairs at the AMC Lowe's Waterfront 22. Aaron Cliver is here.
Yeah, sponsor us, AMC.
Yeah, go ahead. Do it. Get us just double. I take double Stubbs points.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
That'd be good.
I like Stubbs program. Let's talk about the Stubbs program for a second.
In the intro,
no.
we got a special guest. We're going to introduce him in just a second. And this week, we're going to tell you why we're a little disappointed about Crimson Peak. That's a teaser.
Grim Dottor.
Is that Grim Doctor? What are you trying to say?
Said Guillermo. Never mind.
All right, this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, October... Nope, I don't know. October 16th.
It is.
Yeah, 2015. I'm here with Aaron Cliver, and Aaron procured... a very special guest for us this week, so I will let Aaron do the introduction.
I was super excited about finding our guest this week. It's Byron Winton. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys may have seen his artwork. He's an artist. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Some people are weird about like. Well, actually, I'm a pencilier. that's why I always ask people, There's an amazing piece of artwork that Byron did called Creature Feature that I've posted multiple times on Facebook in the last year or two. It is pretty much every horror icon in a movie theater.
How many total?
62.
62 and horror icons.
I think I saw on your page that was 100 plus hours of work.
It's about 150 hours.
Oh, wow.
Spanning over 5 months. Spent mostly a couple hours a night working on that piece after I come home from a grueling day of work.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long ago did you do that?
2013, back in May.
Oh, okay.
2013.
But a lot of, certainly not all of your work, a lot of your work is focused on horror.
Correct.
And that's why we wanted to bring in...
We scooped him up.
Month. Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah.
And Aaron, and one of our listeners, and I probably forgot the name again, saw... We posted that piece of art on the page and yelled out. Was it Dave Foreman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave Foreman said, yeah, he's from Pittsburgh. And Aaron went, blah, blah, blah.
I was like, oh, I'm going to be buddies with him because he's good. And all your artwork on your website, what's your website?
ByronWinton.com.
Yeah. I mean, Byron, B-Y-R-O-N, Winton, W-I-N-T-O-N.com. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people listen to this and they're really drunk.
Correct.
I've heard.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
You have other tons of artwork that's a lot of horror themed stuff that's incredible.
Right.
So I thought, hey, you know, a movie like Crimson Peak, it would be great to have an artist because
right.
Guillermo del Toro is one of his biggest strengths is art direction.
Sure.
And this had a lot of painting in this movie.
Yeah.
It had a lot of atmospherics to it.
Yes.
Good gothic design.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a lot of influence from this one comic book artist, Mike Mignola.
Yeah.
I'm going to look to see if he had any hand in it, because all the ghosts had that.
His
design signature.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole, like, ghost, the smoky ghost and things like that.
Yeah, the way the skin... wrapped around the skull,
uh-huh.
a lot, and the way the form hung in the air, remind me of Mignola's artwork.
Really,
yeah.
I really liked the overall production design and art direction.
Yeah, I did too. I it was beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. Over the top at times. You know, very.
Yeah.
You know, this is the most haunted looking house I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, kind of stuff. But beautiful, costumes great, lighting was excellent.
Yeah, you even said, like, you know, as you guys know, Sean and I always whisper to each other during the movie, you basically said, like, oh, this is going to give Fury Road a run for its money in costume design.
In costume, well, look, the costumes in Fury Road, hey, this is costuming talk. The costumes in Fury Road are better, but these are the costumes that win the award every year. The big Victorian Gothic.
We did all say this in the theater. I did say this to Sean, whispering. But you're right. They do always win, but I think it's about time that something else wins. Because those period clothes always win. And
it's high fashion. I don't know if Mad Max Fury Road costuming is couture. It is couture, but it's just,
I think it's going to win because it's original. It's not a period, you know?
It's inventive use of material.
I mean,
it doesn't have to be elegant. How much patterns and shapes and textures can we put into a thing?
Right.
And make it the most acceptable.
I mean,
the Mad Max was.
I mean, like in Immortan Joe. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. I mean that. I mean, you got a full, him dressing.
A transparent dome.
Yeah, the chest plate. Like, I mean, all that
and
stuff.
The powder and the.
Oh yeah.
That was great.
And even just all his like minions. You know, those guys with the white paint.
And and to the brides and to Furiosa and to the way that. I've almost said Knox Boys. That's a Knox. Local punk band.
That's hilarious.
The War Boys, right?
Yeah, correct. War Boys.
Well, the War Boys. Yeah, all great. The awards go to the stuff like Crimson Peak. Speaking of Mad Max and awards, by the way.
I'm going to tell Byron that probably the last 30 episodes of this has led to Mad Max Fury Road or Interstellar, so buckle in.
Right.
the two best movies of the last 2 years so far.
Speaking of the awards, though, I got an email that was, a very general announcing the Fury Road campaign thing.
For what? What are they campaigning? I'm excited.
Well, I mean, anything good campaigns for everything.
Sure.
So it has every category. Best picture, director, writer, everything. Yeah. The interesting thing is, unless I'm reading it wrong, it looks like this is one where they're like, no, we're not sending you the movie. Here's when you could go see it again.
Really?
Which is the move that...
Oh, I did hear that. They're going to put it back in the theater. Right.
Well, for awards viewings. So, you know, it doesn't matter to me because it was like, here's 18 dates in L.A. and 6 in San Francisco and 3 in London and 7 in New York.
Yeah.
But that's a move that, you know, studios make when they're serious, when they're like, this isn't going to look good on not even a Blu-ray, a 4-year consideration DVD that someone's watching at their desk.
Right.
They sent one out for that, and they sent the same thing for Black Mass. But that generally does not work.
Yeah,
because us movie critics are lazy, and a lot of people, if you don't hand it to them on a silver platter, they're like, well, then I'm not thinking about it.
And you're going to watch it on your laptop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But the one note, I when I opened it, I was pumped to see this. I was concerned about the acting races. I was concerned that they were going to try to sneak Charlize Theron in as supporting, and they said, no way. Best actor.
Really?
For your consideration, best actor, Tom Hardy, best actress, Charlize Theron.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which was very, very good to see.
I heard they're thinking about making a sequel.
Without
Charlize, yeah.
Without that character.
I heard everyone has conflicting reports on this because it's George Miller and he's probably changing his mind every 12
minutes.
He's
cuckoo bananas and he's 77 years old.
I think he's got a good, awesome track record, so allow him to be.
Yeah, I don't care.
I heard that he has two ideas. He has an idea for a Max movie and an idea for a Furiosa movie, and he doesn't know which one he wants to do.
I wouldn't ask the public because they're going to ask for Furiosa.
We'll find out.
I want Furiosa.
We'll find out in
I wouldn't
10
mind.
To 15 yeah. years.
Yeah.
He's going to sneak that one in at 90. He's going to go back into the desert. That's the thing.
He still got it.
He said in one of those interviews, like, I'm a little apprehensive because I'm old and I was in the desert for 7 months.
Right.
So I don't know if I want to do that again.
It's Max in a wheelchair.
yeah, pretty much.
It's in a souped up wheelchair.
Yeah. Anyway, Crimson Peak.
What did we see?
Okay, wait. Now that we're completely off the rails, I'm doing this now because I'm going to forget otherwise, that I wanted to mention, we got a note from our friends at the Manor Theater.
Oh, yeah, cool stuff happening
there. In Squirrel Hill. That's a great theater. That was always a great theater.
Yeah.
And they just redid it. The entire theater is like the luxury section here. It's all plush seats.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
They got a great bar. They've got great food. You can get... you can get pretentious hipster food there for your movie snacks. They've got, like, hummus and some kind of, you know, tomato salad thingy, and they have great food and, you know, a kind of a cool little neighborhood art house. And they are doing some midnight movies for Halloween. This Saturday, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Friday, The Shining at midnight. The 24th, they're doing The Evil Dead, the original version, not the Cuckoo Bananas remake.
The insane remake.
Is Evil Dead the first one, not the second one?
The first one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That's good.
That's October 24th at midnight. And on the 31st, Halloween night, they are doing Nightmare on Elm Street at midnight. That's at the Manor Theater in Squirrel Hill. I believe it's manorpgh.com. Google it. If you're in Pittsburgh, one of a lot of good places to see some horror stuff.
For sure.
This Halloween. And Row House, of course, as well. We will go to Row House Halloween week for our episode on The Exorcist. And they're also doing... They're doing Hocus Pocus. And they're doing a new one called Extraordinary Tales.
Yeah. I know that movie.
Yeah. It's like an anthology kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go see horror movies. Maybe not Crimson Peak, though. I'm going to be honest with you. And I'm the one here who liked the movie.
I liked the movie.
Okay.
It didn't blow my top off.
Yeah, you're our guest.
No, definitely
go,
not.
Go first with a general impression.
General impression, there was too many obvious moments. I saw things, it was predictable.
Yeah.
There was very melodramatic, I believe. Mm-hmm. There were some great moments throughout the film. I thought the acting was fine. The effects were interesting in a good way. I thought the scares were genuine.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, first half of the film, I just thought it was a bit too melodramatic.
Yeah.
And very slow at that. Yeah. I kind of liked it. I think it has no audience.
I think they tried to tie in the gothic ambiance of the second half by creating like two lighting scenarios. So there's a lot of red and green lighting throughout the first half. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made it cartoony, like almost like if you compare it to like Creepshow, they did.
Yeah.
You would do that for certain moments to create a certain heightened atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but they use that a lot, and it just took me out of it.
I think it's a really interesting project because he's telling everyone it's not a horror movie; it's a gothic romance.
Right,
which it is.
No, absolutely. But you know, when you sell it as a horror movie. You know, I want it to be a horror movie, and it was this gothic romance that had, like, ghosts kind of thrown in at the 11th hour, it seemed like.
They were the supporting cast.
But it really gave no motivation to the film at all.
Right.
That's what I didn't like about it.
Well, this is early enough that it's not a spoiler. You know, she our main character, Amelia, Evelyn. Amelia?
No, Edith.
Edith.
Yeah.
Edith.
They all had E's.
Yes.
Enola.
Played by Mia Wasikowska.
Mia Wasikowska. I like her a lot. I think of her mostly in Stoker, which is by the guy who did Old Boy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was really good in that.
I didn't see that.
She was really good in a movie called The Double that I really like with Jesse Eisenberg. I think she's good.
I remember as Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, she's Alice in Alice in Wonderland. That's her big one. She plays a writer, and she's writing a ghost story. And early on, she says, it's not about the ghosts. The ghosts are a metaphor for the past. Right. And a big, you know, and that's a big blinking neon Vegas sign, like, I'm talking about the movie you're watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
She wasn't a Jane Eyre a writer. She was more of a Mary Shelley writer.
Oh, yes, right.
She quipped to one of being catty with other women who were kind of putting her down.
Yeah, well, or didn't they... they said Jane Austen, right?
Jane Austen.
They name checked.
She was in Jane Eyre, actually.
That's right.
Jane Eyre. She was in that.
They name checked Jane Austen early on. And what he's doing here... Did he write this, by the way?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He was trying to write, like, a Jane Austen story.
Yeah.
that happens to have ghosts and some actually very impressive and shocking scenes of violence in it. It was let me do what a Jane Austen ghost story would be like, and I like that. I think it's interesting. It's also kind of boring, and I think most people who come and see it are going to be like, God.
I thought it was pretty boring, dude.
It's slow.
And even the scares, I mean, maybe for, you know, normal moviegoers that don't watch a lot of horror movies, the scares will be good enough for them. But for me, I mean, as Byron was saying, I mean, there was multiple things where I was just, I'm too experienced in horror to be like, come on, dude. Like, even the novice horror watcher, like, it was very predictable.
The writing, it was on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were so many telltale signs for the actor, the character, to leave the house.
Right.
I mean, her mother more or less told her not to as a ghost. Right.
That's the setup. That's the opening. Her mother's like, don't go to the place.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She doesn't put that together for a while.
She gets to the house and the walls are... look like they're bleeding blood.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler because like it seems like that, but it's like a
it's clay. It's built on a clay mine, which is that a thing?
Apparently, clay is red gack. It's red.
It's the ectoplasm from Ghostbusters.
It's Ghostbusters 2. There's a lot of Ghostbusters 2 going on.
Yeah,
it doesn't dance to Sam Cooke.
It was ectoplasm or anything. It was just wet. Mud.
Yeah,
it was. To harvest it and make money off of it.
Right.
It was just a bit ham-fisted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hole in the roof, everything was falling down around them. I mean, everything was a metaphor for, or I guess, like, glaring you in the face. Like, don't go there. Don't stay there.
Right.
Just listen to the signs.
It feels like someone, it feels like a writer and director who researched a time period and... a style, a literary style.
Sure.
And wrote on that, but because he was researching just for this project, he really just kind of got the surface of it. Yeah. If you compare this to Pan's Labyrinth, which is excellent, clearly that was subject matter that he knew intimately.
Yeah.
And this was subject matter that he learned to do this thing.
I mean, he's been generally pretty good.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the worst movies I've seen of his.
Yeah, I'd agree. And again, let me take
worst with a grain of salt, but when you look at his, list of films, this is one of his worst.
Yeah.
To me.
I mean,
I'll run through.
Hellboy was better than this.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to disagree.
I liked Hellboy. I didn't see the second.
The first movie, first Hellboy, was the character's dear to me, being from an interest in comic books.
Yeah.
But there were just too many campy moments. It just took me out of the film. Mm. Yeah, I think, like I said, the biggest detractor of Crimson Peak was just the predictability.
I've
seen it too many times.
Absolutely.
You see it in crime dramas, the setup, the poisoning.
Yeah.
It's been done over and over again.
Yeah, there's a half dozen scenes.
And
there's probably two dozen scenes where someone looks ominously at a prop.
Right.
It's like, I get it. That pen is coming back.
Okay, he did direct Blade 2.
Right.
Okay. Which was still okay. Devil's Backbone is one of my favorite horror movies. Have you seen that?
I know. I got to watch that. And what's the other one?
Devil's Back. Oh, The Orphanage.
Yeah, I haven't seen.
He's
either.
A producer on that,
right,
but
right.
Damn, it's definitely got his style.
Yeah,
he definitely was in a chair like, do this.
Kronos, I believe his first film was. My introduction to Del Toro.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, his second film was Mimic.
Yeah, which was a complete nightmare for him to make and.
I heard that.
Yeah.
What was that? Was that like the? He did like it was a studio thing,
and they
ripped it apart.
Yeah, he had a clear intention. He was the hot foreign director at the time,
right?
And they just wanted to put him under their.
Gosh, he did Mimic, and then 4 years later, he did Devil's Backbone, which is so good.
He's
so good.
That experience more or less burned him in Hollywood, so he decided that I'm just going to do filmmaking in Mexico.
But then the next year, he did Blade 2.
But well,
it was still Mexican
probably need to pay his bills.
Yeah.
Probably had to pay his bills.
And in a very clear metaphor for a lot of what goes on in Hollywood, was hired to do The Hobbit, right?
Yeah.
Was hired to do The Hobbit, and then he was like, oh, wait, you're not going to let me make this any good? I'm out.
Yeah.
And those movies were awful.
And he still wrote them.
Yeah.
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 He gets a script credit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's credited as screenwriter.
But then, you know, extensive rewrites and, you know,
sure, but he mangling. Has a script like a... oh, I forgot about Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
But Pan's Labyrinth, and I like Pacific Rim. I know
I liked Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
It was a fun, like, action future robot movie.
You know.
Monster movie.
There was a level of ridiculousness, and it worked sure. throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you can live in that world while you're in that theater, it's mm-hmm. fun. It's you know, if it draws you in and it's fun, I mean, it doesn't matter how unbelievable it is to me.
Sure, I agree.
Waiting for the sequel.
Yeah, it is coming.
But here...
And Maelstrom.
And I know
Maelstrom.
I know that you disagreed, but Aaron, you're with me. The ghosts pulled me out of the movie so much.
The ghosts pulled me out of the movie in the trailer. Like, yeah. That, I mean, when I saw, I mean, they were so cartoonish, CGI-ish video game.
That's what I said. It looks like an Xbox cutscene.
They're definitely very stylized.
I love practical effects, and I will, you know, bring up, I mean, he's done it before. Right. I mean, he's done practical effects before.
The last ghost, I don't know if I should say what the ghost
No,
was.
Don't say who it is.
Yeah.
That's the one that I didn't like. It was...
oh, yeah, I know you're talking
like
about.
It was just like a powder face ghost. It just didn't...
Oh, that fit. Was... That
it
was,
just didn't
that
fit
was cheesy.
With the rest of it.
And I think that this might be where we're coming from differently. I appreciated the design
sure,
and the style
right.
of all these ghosts.
Yeah.
It was just so blatantly... A computer-generated
yes,
effect
yes.
in a meticulous a world of practical stuff.
Right, right, right.
I don't get how you...
Like, beautiful set direction
yeah.
with a CGI ghost over top of it looked so bad. I mean, there's so many other things. Like, he's done real ghosts in Devil's Backbone and The Orphanage, and he's done some cool stuff in, I mean, Hellboy, Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, there's tons of practical costumes and effects.
Mm-hmm.
Why do this?
Well,
why?
Doug Jones, his costumed muse, was
yeah.
he played a couple roles in this film.
Mm-hmm.
He played the mother and Edith's mother, the ghost in the beginning, the one that was
oh,
on
yeah,
the
yeah.
Did
you do some research?
I did. I like Doug Jones. I love
oh, cool.
his body of work. I've been meaning to do a piece of art
cool.
kind of showcasing his career.
Mm-hmm.
He also was... mother of Lady, what was that?
Sharp, yeah, Lady Sharp,
Sharp
yeah.
yeah. So
oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's done a lot of stuff with him.
But
yeah.
that's why it bugs me, because, you know, you have some of the best people in the world
right.
in terms of costuming and set design
well,
and production design, and then you layer a cartoon character
well,
on top of it, and it looks like a spooky Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Right, I think they've... you know, did a lot of practical effects with it, but they kind of glossed it with
yes.
computer effects.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And they did that, a studio did that with the Thing remake. Or
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Prequel, where they did amazing effects, and then they decided to fix it all with,
yeah.
remove all the seams
yeah.
in a sense, and add to it, make it more sparkly and glistening.
I think that studios... You know, now that CGI can be really good, often isn't, but certainly can be in certain cases, I think that studios don't have faith in the audience to buy practical effects in some cases.
Right.
I was just talking to my friend Jess, who I hadn't seen in years, and she asked what I had thought of the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. And she said her biggest problem with it is the effects in the original look cheesy and fake, and yet are 10 times better than the computer version.
Sure.
Because if you're invested in a movie, you can accept practical effects, even if they're clearly effects.
Right.
But
right.
To me, it really pulls me out of something to see the ones and the zeros, you know, blatantly on the screen.
Yeah, there's also a level of your brain says it's might be too good, and so you're looking for the seam to pick at. The piece of the wallpaper, you're like, eh. I know all these thousands of zombies. No, there's no way they're all dressed up. Say, like in The Walking Dead, where they have herds.
Sure, absolutely.
Herds of people. So your brain automatically does the math and says, that's not logical.
Yeah, and certain things you're okay with, you know, but this is like, I just, one of my favorites is Insidious. And, I mean, it was all practical demons and ghosts. Right. And it's cool. It's so much better. It feels more alive.
Also Mad Max. Also Interstellar. See?
And you could have done that with
Mad Max had its...
I mean, you could shoot these people on green screen.
Mad Max had its heaping amount of CGI.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. They just, I think... It was used as a small additive to it. They just...
Took the words out of my mouth. Right. You use CGI to add to and enhance.
It's the sizzle, not the steak.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but geez. I mean, when you just have full characters, which is the which is why I hate with a passion I Am Legend. You know, that movie would have been 10 times better. If they would just use real people.
Right.
Just use actors. I mean, and gosh, how long ago was that? When CGI wasn't as good.
That was 2004, maybe?
I also love the story, and they ruined it. But anyway. The original story is incredible, and they blew it.
The Vincent Price one, Last Man on Earth.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I love Charlton Heston.
I like Chuck's
version. I love Omega Man. Yeah. It's so Dawn of the Dead, campy, 70s. I love it.
Yeah. I ended up reading Richard Matheson's I Am Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Probably in my mid-20s.
It's so good.
And yeah. It's just I loved the different point of view of the story. And
yes.
And knowing
the twist.
The Omega Man movie was taking that story, and then they put the 70s spin
in
sense.
Yeah. That was pretty close to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty, yeah. Anyway, you gotta watch Omega Man. And watch The Last Man on Earth. Watch that too.
I haven't seen Omega Man.
Oh, it's so fun.
Crimson Peak, though. I like the cast a lot. Tom Hiddleston is very comfortable in a fancy suit.
Oh, of course he is. And I like Jessica Chastain. I would like to see her play a psychopath in a better movie.
Yeah.
Because for a couple minutes, I was like, ooh, she's terrifying as a crazy person.
Yeah.
Whoops.
You can probably...
She's passionate.
Yeah.
Is it a spoiler that the pale chick who dresses all in black and never smiles, it might be a little off?
And walks around the ring of keys?
That's not going to count as a spoiler, no.
Tim Hiddleston definitely, it's definitely going to bring in the women into the theater because, you know, he's a good leading man.
Yeah.
And Charlie Hunnam.
Well.
Chicks love him.
I guess.
They do.
Like him in the role of the Sons of Anarchy. I don't know if they'll like him as a dapper.
Doctor?
American doctor.
Yeah.
If he was British, maybe.
Yeah.
The guy who was in talks to be in 50 Shades of Grey and then suddenly went, oh, wait, that'd be a horrible idea. There's no way I'm doing that shit.
Great thinking.
Yeah, good move. Anyway, look, it had a great cast. It looks great every second that there's not a ghost on screen.
I agree.
I think
they'll get nominated for costumes.
I think it's an interesting project. When we end up rating this, you know, my rating will be in positive territory. That being said, I think we all wanted to see a home run, and
I really wanted to see him make a really good horror movie.
He had a great track record telling beautiful ghost stories.
Yeah,
and this one was just underwhelming.
Yeah,
nothing original about it.
Mm.
And see, that's why I say, think it has no audience, because the audience is, you know, people who have read Pride and Prejudice 8 times.
Yeah.
But people who have read Pride and Prejudice 8 times probably will lose their minds at the violence in this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, the romance part of it, yeah, the people that would like the romance part of it wouldn't like the some buckets of blood.
There were a couple moments where I was
writhing.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it was a little in your face twice.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of liked it. I never want to sit through it again. No. And I don't know if I would really recommend it to anybody.
I agree. I can't disagree with you there, man.
I didn't think we were going to pick wrong tonight. Because as discussed, it was this or Spielberg's Bridge of Spies.
We picked this.
I'm okay with it, man. I liked it. I mean, it's not high on my list, but...
I was asking you before, too. You like...
I like showy things. I'm an artist. I like the visual stimulation of a piece of art.
That you said, like, I don't even care about stories and characters.
Yeah, like, characters, I mean... Yeah, I mean, that's nice.
that's a nice touch.
I
get it.
My movies that I really gravitate towards have a nice packaging to them, in a sense.
Sure.
They look pretty.
A beautiful palette.
Correct.
I'm okay with that.
I'm not shying away from it. I mean,
that's fine. Sure.
My art is pretty. I mean, there's no substance to it.
I want to. We're going to talk more about this substance-free work in Extra Butter very briefly. Aaron, I've been doing enough of these. You talk about puzzle packs this week.
Oh, okay.
Wait,
guys.
And don't take my frustration as dismissing the product. Love the product. I just have been riffing on puzzle packs for about 15 weeks in a row. I want to kick it over to Aaron on this one.
This episode is sponsored by, as usual, Puzzle Packs. PuzzlePacks.com. That's Packs with an X. PuzzlePax.com.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, Puzzle Packs is a six-pack holder for your beverage, a.k.a. your beer. It is something that folds up and you build yourself into a puzzle pack, and then you can fold it back up again, put it in your knapsack, in your purse, in your book bag, and you don't have to get some, you know, wet, crusty cardboard six-pack holder from the shop. You can take your own. And once you build it, on the side of it, you can get emblazoned on the side your logo, your name, your phone number, whatever you want, it'll be emblazoned. And then, as a little special extra treat, you have a bottle opener attached to the six-pack. They don't only come in six packs. They come in four packs.
Wine size.
Yeah, in case you're a wine snob, or a 45-year-old mom.
Or you like a bottle of Chimay or one of them big beers.
Yeah, you like the Chimay. That's good. I know some friends that like Chimay.
More than six? Is there like a 12-pack?
No, just six and four.
And other great products like coasters and
the coasters
magnets
are awesome. Yeah. They have wooden coasters, once again, emblazoned with your logo.
You may want to check this stuff out.
Well, you put art on things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
put some art on.
I mean, could you imagine making some Universal Monster coasters? And then, you know, I mean, think about it.
I have to go through the proper channels, but sure.
No, you don't. People sell.
This is just for you.
But on the coasters, they have a bottle opener on every coaster.
And you sell them under the table at a convention. You want to see some unlicensed stuff, and you bust out the Puzzle Packs coasters with the Universal Monsters.
Byron hasn't seen Puzzle Packs. They're pretty rad.
I'm looking into
It's also American-made. It's a company owned by a veteran.
Sustainable. Green company.
Yeah, it is a sustainable green company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're hitting home runs with puzzle packs.
And if you do want to check it out, when you go to the website, use the offer code HANDLE.
Mm-hmm.
That's the middle word in You Can't Handle the Truth.
Smart.
And you will get $5 off of your order. Big or small, $5 off.
Where do I go to look this up?
PuzzlePax.com. Right. PuzzlePax. That's Pax with an X.com. Go there, use coupon code HANDLE, or, you know, you could listen to my podcast, Grown Dad Business, and use coupon code AARON, AARON, and get more money off on a separate order?
I don't know, try that out. Not one per order. But hey, either way you go to Puzzle Packs and emblazon your love of beer right onto your soul.
Emblazon your love of beer upon your soul.
We're going to be back. We're going to talk about art. We're going to talk about some other movies. We're going to talk about some things as we recover from our slight Crimson Peak letdown. We'll be right back after a word from the Epicast Network.
Boom! I'm Aaron Kleiber. Guys, check out my podcast, Grown Dad Business, part of the Epicast Network. I talk to guests, some comedians, actors, some pretty fun, interesting people about their kids, about their childhood, about parents. And every once in a while, I bring in my own kids. Like my son Luke. Should they listen to the podcast? Why?
Because we love you, right?
Oh, okay. Or my daughter Becca talks to us. Why should they listen to the podcast?
Because my dad is funny.
True.
He is a good spy.
He's a good spy?
Yeah.
Not anymore. You just told everybody.
And he's awesome.
Luke, am
Yay,
I awesome?
Poops.
I do poop. Listen to Grown Dad Business, guys, part of the Epicast Network, and you'll get more of this and hopefully more entertaining things that is not happening. Follow your heart.
And we're back. Aaron, where are you going to be this week?
Oh, I don't know.
All right.
well, this week, tonight, I actually will be making some guest appearances at Junior's in Erie.
Oh, yeah?
I think we have some people listening in Erie. They are good people. Oh, that is badass!
We're looking through the art now.
We're looking through Byron's art, and there is a really dope... hold on a second. Really dope bounty hunter photo from the ground up. That is badass. Anyway, so tonight...
So Junior's.
I'll be at Junior's, and then Saturday night, I'll be at the Comedy Playground in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
how about the roast of Freddy Krueger, by the way?
I mean, we've mentioned it before. Byron, you're going to have to come hang out at this, because it's going to be hilarious.
When and where?
It's October 30th at the Arcade Comedy Theater. It's at 8 p.m., where comedians, stand-up comedians and improvisers will be playing different characters. I will be playing a character. We're keeping that under wraps for now. Nice. And we're doing a comedy roast of Freddy Krueger as different horror
amazing.
Characters. Yeah. A lot of the horror characters we're going to be playing are in your creature feature poster that's right there.
So you're going to be Elvira.
Yes, correct.
That's... yeah.
That's a hell of an image right there.
Actually, I might change it to be Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, I'll be trick-or-treating with my kids on October 31st.
Of course.
no, I'll be in Mount Pleasant, Mount Pleasant Volunteer Fire Company in Pennsylvania on October 24th. And, yeah, then we get into November and there's some cool stuff happening.
If you're listening to this on Friday, tonight, the 16th, it is the third annual live read of Ghostbusters.
Wow.
At Arcade Comedy Theater. One show only, 10 p.m. I will be three-peating as Egon, my third consecutive Egon appearance.
Nice.
Because, you know, one day my voice changed. And I became Harold Ramis on that day. So I have to keep playing the part, but I love it. Love doing the live read. Great cast.
When you do his lines, it is... I mean, you hear his voice.
Oh, yeah.
It's Harold Ramis.
It's awesome.
And most... You know, the instruction is... You know, the direction is not to... You know, they don't... In the rehearsal, they don't say, imitate the person.
They just say, Sean, talk.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, I mean for the cast in general. You know, like our friend Jethro Nolan, who's playing Bill Murray's character, is not told to do a Bill Murray voice.
Right.
I just can't not be doing a Harold Ramis voice.
Yeah.
So that's what happens.
That's fine.
Jethro Nolan, Terry Jones, Mike Rubino, and Abby Fudor, great cast.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. That's tonight. Tomorrow night, I'm doing a benefit at the Center Township Volunteer Fire Department, and that is a benefit for the, I believe it's the Beaver County Humane Society. Yeah, that's right. Center Township Volunteer Fire Department tomorrow night. Always love doing shows for Humane Societies, so I will be out there if you're out towards that end of town. Does that do plugs? We plugged?
Yeah.
I get a plug.
Okay, plug.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Saturday the 17th, Zombie Fest.
Oh, that's right.
Where is that at?
Millville Park.
That's right.
Yeah, they moved.
Oh my gosh, I did a comedy show there 2 years ago.
I'm not going to be vending my stuff. I'll be helping out at the Living Dead Museum. I get a shirt design that they're selling.
That's awesome.
A new shirt.
Yeah. The Zombie Fest.
I just started getting into the t-shirt designing field. And so,
dude,
a couple of my not
if you put some of your designs on shirts, I know a guy named Aaron Kleiber that might buy some. And now my wife is going, "Don't you buy any more goddamn shirts?"
Yeah. Right.
That's the best. We're looking through Byron's art right now. What else, did you have anything else going on?
That's pretty much it.
You'll be at that's months away. But hey, you'll be at Steel City Con.
Yeah, in December.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan. Yeah, I usually do a lot of conventions, one every month, and different horror conventions. Like 2 weeks ago, I was in Monster Mania down in Baltimore, which was a great show, and I love doing these conventions. I get to meet fans, get to show my work, get to meet new potential clients.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
What's is that the big thing? Because I mean, you know, William Shatner is at the convention, I know what he's doing there. He's making thousands of dollars for existing for 4 hours.
Yeah,
For
sitting in a chair.
Right. So for you, is it networking? Is it, you know, finding the right audience? I mean,
it's a little of everything. It's also a way for me to gauge my art on if people were receptive to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I'm targeting the people that attend horror conventions. So when I go do a comic convention, there's a completely different mentality. My work is liked by a lot of people in different genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when I do a comic book piece of art, the horror fans, they tend not to like it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They overlook it and they're like, well, we want to see the Freddies, or we want to see the more common stuff. I've done, you know, my original horror ideas and presented them. Sometimes they're a hit, sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a good way for me to, it's a great barometer in a sense.
Yeah.
So then I just tool my shop in a sense for the next show.
Do you have something where I don't mean to relate hours and hours of your work to doing stand-up jokes, mm-hmm. but do you have something that you've done that people love and you're like, why do you guys like this so much? And you have to do stuff more like that? I don't know, does art feel that way more? Because, like, you know, in stand-up, I'll have a joke that's like, oh, whatever, and then people like it, and I'm like, I'm tired of doing this.
Well, lately...
Or tired of drawing this character or something.
Lately, I've been doing a lot of small black-and-white portraits, mostly character portraits.
I saw them.
Portraits,
yeah, they're really good.
Of different monsters and heroes, and I've been getting a lot of requests. People hire me for particular ones. So I'll do a Walking Dead character, say Merle, and then I get people coming out of Facebook wanting to commission me for other characters. Next thing you know, I have a lineup of like 10, 20 different more Walking Dead
characters. That's awesome. People don't know what this is, and I was really excited.
You're pointing at the Nightbreed piece that I did a rendition of. There's a piece, Nightbreed and Clive Barker have been pretty dear to me over the years. I was a fan of his in high school.
Super artistic.
Yeah, he's a man of many talents.
Very imaginative.
And
yeah.
I admire people with creative integrity in a sense. I don't know. He just seems to bleed art no matter what medium it is. And I like people like that. I wish he was a friend of mine, you know?
Yeah.
There have been other people, you know, I met over the course of my career that are like that in different forms.
Yeah.
Whether they be a local artists or creators, to even meeting some of my, some of the artists when I was a kid, I finally got to meet some of them. Like Michael Whalen. He's a book illustrator since from the 70s, and he's been having a very robust career. He does Isaac Asimov covers and Stephen King book covers, and McCaffrey, and so it's nice to finally meet your idols and have a drink with them in a sense. That's for the Nightbreed piece. That's a person I probably will never get to have a drink with, in a sense,
right?
Which is kind of disheartening.
Yeah, if people haven't seen Nightbreed, I loved Nightbreed when I first saw it. Have you seen Nightbreed? It's such a weird thing because I loved it when I saw it when I was younger because it was like this mix of horror and like
fantasy.
Yeah. Like it's like it's almost like wait, this could be a kid's movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the style, it could be a kid's movie, mm-hmm. but it's a horror movie.
It's kind of campy.
Yeah, it is.
The big thing about that this film great. Was a role reversal where the bad guys are the good guys.
Right, right.
And the normal
all people the normal people
are,
yeah.
Are the ones that are just villainous.
We stopped
this
on
is great too.
Oh yeah, that Evil Dead one is good.
Yeah.
I almost have like a shirt kind of like this.
This is great podcasting where we're talking about things we're looking at.
That's all right. We'll post pictures of stuff if Byron will let us so you know what we're talking about. We'll go to his website,
byronwinton.com. There's a great Evil Dead piece here. I've only been to one horror convention, and when I was there, I got an Evil Dead poster autographed by those three.
Nice.
That's a pretty good get.
Yeah, it's beat all to hell now, but I still have it. Yeah, there's five people in Evil Dead, and I met the
well,
three
I mean,
less important ones.
You know, when somebody does stuff, you know, we've had a relationship with like Goods and Evil.
Yeah.
.com, you know, those you know, does t-shirts and anybody that does like, you know, movie arts, it's fascinating and you know, our fans love that stuff. Because us and a lot of people that listen, we all have movie shirts.
I found a market
art.
for my art.
That's good.
What is that market?
The horror genre, the horror
yeah.
film genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because it's a huge marketing industry. There's you can get licensed gigs.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
Can be hired by, say, companies like Fright Rags, or
mm-hmm.
you're doing t-shirts, and they or special Blu-ray editions. They're constantly looking for the specialized art to put
mm-hmm.
on their product, you know, re-releases. And that's about networking and being good at your craft, in a sense, too.
Well, and to go, you know, to the one that drew our attention to Creature Feature, which you got to see this, you know, go to facebook.com/handlethetruthpodcast. Aaron is a master of perfectly timed posts, so this will be up. I guess this is the question I had.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any part of you that's, you know,
I had some questions about Creature Feature as well.
I mean, I want to talk about the process, but I'm also wondering, you know, I'm sure this image has now been posted to Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr,
yeah.
tens if not hundreds of thousands of times, and a lot of them probably don't have your name on it.
Yeah.
And what is, you know, how does that make you feel? I mean, are you just happy people are seeing it? Clearly it's a work that you're still getting attention on.
I can't police it.
Yeah.
If I put a piece of work online in any capacity, it's going to have a life of its own.
Yeah.
Now, if it's good enough, people will find the source.
I found it. Like,
right.
I was so excited to find out who the artist was and to see your other stuff.
I've had a lot of people reach me over the past couple of years, because I created this back in, you know, May of 2013. And people around the world have either did Google searches, and it's always been instant. They've been able to find me and, you know, buy prints. And
it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, and I keep myself available. I'm on Etsy. I sell things through my website. You know, I'm very good at the social media. Like, I have the avenues open.
Yeah.
But I can't police that when it hurts me a little bit on the inside when I see a very cropped or distorted
yeah.
image. I'm
right.
like, why did you... Somebody is...
It was funny because when I searched for it, I saw cropped, like, one row. And I was
yeah.
like, where's the whole thing?
Yeah.
I want the whole thing.
Yeah, people... I'm not sure why they would do it, you know. There's a couple of versions that I put up. One with the border that had the title and my name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one without it.
Yeah.
I know those are the two that I put out. Within a week, when I first put it online, it became viral.
Yeah.
Through various websites.
Right.
Viral, like,
and I think
thousands
I've,
of
I
people.
I think I've
it's
found
amazing.
It before, too, because a lot of Facebook pages from horror things.
Yeah.
We'll post it and be like, you know, around
it's, the... It's amazing when I get to meet people at conventions and they'll show me their phone. They're like, it's my back, you know, my screen.
That's great.
And they see, I bring the original painting with me to conventions a lot. So people can see the, you know, either.
Like, no, I really am the guy that did this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, cause I'm very curious. How did you,
put this together?
How did you no, I'm getting deeper than this. I don't care about painting. How did you decide who goes where? Because it's very curious that Elvira is in the front, but I have a theory about that.
Right. Originally, the idea started with, I wanted to make almost like a love letter to the horror film genre.
Right.
And I saw a lot of fan art that just had images, just one scene from a film here and an actor from that same movie, and they just didn't fit. And
right.
I knew I wanted a piece that had cohesion, where everybody belonged. And Elvira was more or less an after, didn't really come into play. Originally, it was two kids up front, and they were just going to be fucking around on the phones or kind of distraction.
Oh, you know? Wow.
You know, cause,
oh, that's interesting. If you had, like, two, like, teenagers up front or something.
Yeah, because then that would have a whole
That's a whole nother...
impact.
It is, so actually.
I went with the sex appeal, and it was a matter of where do I go with sex appeal? Do I use her or some other, like, Vampira or...
Or Mrs. Voorhees.
Right. Mrs. Voorhees,
yeah,
in the sexy sweater.
Yeah, my theory was that is because she is separate from everybody else.
Mm.
Is that she kind of hosts?
Correct.
Them
in a weird way.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's kind of what thinking.
Even though I believe that she's never really hosted any of the movies.
Sure.
In this piece.
You know what I mean? She's like this hostess.
She's the spokesperson for the industry. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like that. I was actually going through this with somebody with another comic. I was actually showing them, and I was like naming them, and I was like, "Do you know that? Do you know that? Do you know that?" Because I'm pretty good at this.
I hear the name game all the time.
It's fun, man.
People will point and talk and point and it's like a guessing game. The pieces become so interactive. It's
yeah. Amazing. This is a podcast, but
I
you
never
know.
Expected it to go to that level. People.
Oh, it's so fun, dude.
We'll do the name game, and then sometimes they'll tell me stories about certain characters and how they impact their lives.
Yeah,
and it's
who is not in the image that you feel bad about?
Was there
one where you're like, oh, I forgot to put?
There's got
to
be.
There's
actually, I was trying to think of that.
I'll tell you the one that really intentionally left out is the Predator. And there's reasoning for it, but
I'm okay with that.
But the reasoning kind of is if crumbles.
The Predator is not a horror movie.
Correct.
It's an action movie.
Nor is Darkness from Legend. He is not
right.
He's horrific, but it's not a horror film.
Right.
And it's the same.
Yeah, that was a surprising.
It's the same with Audrey too. She is in a comedy. So. My theory, reasoning put certain characters went out the window, and so I could have easily kept a Predator.
Right.
Put one in, because he's horrific looking.
I think there was one that I didn't know, that one.
Mr. Hyde.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's in the classic throw there.
Oh, yeah,
it's duh. It's colorized. The characters immediately around her are the womanizers.
Oh,
really?
Crypt Keeper, Chucky.
Leprechaun, we got Spike, Bella.
That's
Phantom.
Vibes.
Yeah.
Phantom.
I was trying to find, I was telling somebody about the little Tiki dolls.
Right.
And it's this TV movie trilogy of terror.
Oh.
And I've been trying.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Actually, last year when I saw this, and I saw that, and I remember seeing it years ago. because I used to VHS everything. I would rent every horror movie in existence on a shelf. And I remember seeing it, and it's like this TV, and I can't, I want to find it. I can probably watch it on YouTube.
He wasn't in the piece originally.
Really?
Before I do a painting, I have this pencil drawing.
But that was a, like, I was like, whoa, that's a that's a real deep cut.
Intricate. I do an intricate pencil drawing. So it wasn't until the stage where I started painting it. Show little pieces of the painting online at Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then people started making suggestions about, where is this character? How about this character?
Right.
And then someone mentioned the Zuni doll. And,
yeah.
And I had no clue.
Yeah, yeah. Is that Maniac Cop back there?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I ended up watching the Trilogy of Terror clip on YouTube. And,
okay.
And the point where, you know, that thing's running around going, ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, yeah.
It had to go in there.
Wishmaster in there?
He is.
Where is he?
The Jin is right,
yep,
right there.
Oh, yeah.
Wishmaster does not get enough love. It's not good, but it still doesn't get enough love.
There's some, you know, over the years, I've had, you know, people make suggestions of where this character, where that character is at.
I was excited you included Candyman.
I've been collecting a list of characters that I wish I put in.
Hmm.
One of the big ones I wanted to put in was Leslie Vernon from...
Oh, yeah.
It was a nice... it's just his turquoise mask in this sea of blue would have stand out. Huh. Nice pop of color in a certain spot. That's just, you know, art.
Now, so the question is, are you going to do another one? This is so popular.
Yeah, well,
that
I'm not going to repeat the painting.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to chase that, in a sense,
right,
that high. This piece has done well for me. Attention. It's got a life of its own.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas for a follow-up piece similar to it, but completely different genre.
Ah.
I want to go sci-fi.
I love it. Are you going to sit them all in the Jedi Council?
No. It's going to be a bit more...
Are they going to be part of the Senate?
We're going to say more 60s sci-fi.
I know you're talking about it. I love it. I'm gonna guess after the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. But unfortunately, that's a piece that's going to take a long time.
Sure.
To do.
Yeah.
And you know, that's also a passion project, and passion projects get backburnered.
I
have to really focus on commissions and paying the rent, in a sense.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're gonna rate Crimson Peak and get out of here.
Remember that.
But
check out Byron.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
ByronWinton.com.
This is awesome.
Winton. Winton. Winton.
Right.
Winton.
And
Byron.
And
not Brian.
When you
Byron.
See, if you haven't seen Creature,
Winton.
If you haven't seen Creature Feature yet, when you see it, you're gonna want it. I mean, are prints available? And
yeah, prints are available through my website and at Etsy. If for those who are hesitant,
I have
to
get one now
independently.
Yeah,
I have it in different sizes.
I knew if I met him that I would definitely get it, and I don't care if I get yelled at for buying another poster.
Hang it in your car. I don't, you know, just find a way.
People have shown me photos, sent me photos of the. They'll buy a poster version and they'll hang it right next to their DVD collection.
Yeah,
pretty impressive movie room.
It's an honor to be a part of everybody's.
Absolutely,
you know,
man. Yeah,
I spent a lot of time, in blood, sweat, and tears putting this thing together.
Yeah,
it's nice to see it's doing well out there.
And you have the process on your website.
The steps that I went into making the piece.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I'm just saying, if I win the Powerball, I will give you $50,000 to do the same thing with professional wrestlers 1985 to 1995.
Dude. I think Sean just gave you something that's going to make you a lot of money.
Wrestlers.
The wrestler thing?
You know,
wrestling people
awesome
waste
sounds,
so much damn money.
I can't see me doing something like that. I really have to have money.
Can I ask you a question, Brian?
Invested,
do you hate money?
Apparently. I hate money!
Well, I'll show you the thing that it reminds me of later. It's one of my favorites.
Like the Simpsons poster? I had that in college. The one with all the...
Sadly, I'm an artist, so, I'm very emotional with my work, and I have some sort of...
I get it.
I gravitate towards the dark nature of material, subject matter.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I've been approached by doing a lot of different other subject matter and products.
Yeah.
And I just have to pass because it just
doesn't. That makes complete
sense. If it doesn't hit you, it doesn't hit you.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody approached me with G.I. Joe, and I'm kind of like thinking, do I love it enough to do it?
Right.
I know it would be awesome. Do I want to do it? Do I want to spend the time to do it?
Yeah.
Here's a 60-second review before we go.
All right.
Because last night I went and saw Goosebumps. And
I really wanted to see that.
Here's the thing. The best thing about it is also the reason that you have no reason to see it.
Jack Black?
No, no.
He's good.
He's fine. He does his job. The thing is, it's really faithful. And by that I mean it's for 8 to 10-year-olds.
Oh, okay.
The books are for 8 to 10-year-olds. The movie is for 8 to 10-year-olds.
So,
it is not...
Fart jokes?
Not to that level, but in the level that it's very, like, cheesy and gentle and kind of over the top and goofy. This is not the whole family will love it. This is we made a movie for the exact target audience that these books were. And it had moments that... you know, really hit me because I grew up reading those books. Like just a pure little nostalgia hit.
Yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's not really great, and it was
is
clearly,
it fun?
It's fun enough.
How dark is it for kids?
Not at all.
Really?
Becca could see it.
Like Scooby-Doo dark.
She's a scaredy cat.
I think that Luke could probably see it, honestly.
Luke could see it.
Is it Scooby-Doo?
The worst things that happen to humans are like, people get like frozen in ice. Like
so it is for kids.
So
yes.
There's no like death.
No, there's no death.
Is there like horror? Like
no, the most horrific stuff is like there are some zombies.
Spooky.
Oh, they're fine.
There's
zombies.
Some spooky imagery.
Yeah,
my 7-year-old daughter is way more scary cat than my 5-year-old son, and I was gonna introduce him to monsters. How do you think I was going to? The Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
He can watch the old movies.
Sure.
I think he could.
I think he probably could. It's cute. There are moments that made me laugh. It very clearly was, they had a very limited special effects budget. Effects look bad.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, they do look pretty bad.
I've seen the trailer on... I've seen the trailer in the theater. It didn't look too bad.
Yeah, when you're staring
at
it for a while.
Not as bad as Crimson
Peak. It's a lot worse than Crimson Peak. So it's clear that they were like, how much... We have money to do how much worth of special effects.
And about half of 55, that goes to Jack Black.
About 55 minutes. So then they literally put a long first half hour on it before things get crazy. Like, we ran out of money for ghosts. We just got to have humans for half an hour to make it to the running time.
So is it cartoony?
Very cartoony. Yeah.
Okay.
Creature designs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... Actually, the cool thing about it is... a lot of the creatures look exactly like they did on the cover of the book.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It looks like
that
art,
yeah.
which is cool. It's, you know, if you grew up on it like me, it'll be a very mild nostalgia hit.
Cool.
It'll be just enough to make
That's
you
fun.
Not regret it. I wouldn't, you know, go pay $12, but, you know, if you throw it on ABC Family next year, it'll be just fine.
That'll play forever
in
October on everything.
Let's rate Crimson Peak and get out of here, and I give it a heartbreaking 6, because I wanted 9, and I'm coming with the rating.
I really wanted an 8 or 9.
And 6, you know, to me is, I'm not saying it's bad, but that's all I'm saying.
I'm going to go 5, bro.
Yeah.
5.
This is out of 10?
This is out of 10? Yeah, I'll give it a 7.
All right. Yeah. So 6 is the average, which
it's
was
not
my
bad.
Rating.
Well, you're the
I'm
professional.
Correct.
What do I know?
Next week, live from the Scare House.
That's right.
Aaron and I will be down there, and we are going to go through the main haunt, which has the trick-or-treat area, which has the new Krampus area.
Yep.
And we're going to do that, and we're going to go through the basement. We're going to record immediately after we're restrained and harassed and sexually, accosted and... There
That's
was some electric shocks last year.
I've never learned
year.
About being sexually accosted in health class.
Well, you know, last year when Happy the Clown threw you on that bed, you learned about it.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
We were locked in a coffin last year. I was scared out of my mind in the coffin. You took a damn nap.
I almost fell asleep.
Wow. You were like, this is soothing.
It was soothing, sleeping in a coffin. It was the best.
And our friend Aunt Tercera literally stuck pins in our skin.
Yeah.
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 It's intense.
And we're not spoiling the basement.
That's last year. That's last year.
Because it's totally different every year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to Scare House?
I have not.
You need to get your shit together, Byron.
I know. I'm losing my spooky cred card.
Yeah. That's next week. Retro episode on The Exorcist Halloween weekend.
Yep.
Where's Missy Moreno to come and improvise a song to end the show?
I know, because I'm not singing any songs about Crimson Peak.
Yeah.
And I paint. Don't sing or dance.
Aaron, take us home with, I don't know.
Don't go into that house that I told you to go into like 20 times in the first half of the film.
I'm going to keep you coughing.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter at Sean Collier, PGH, and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, K-L-E-I-B-E-R. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.